That's good.
Welcome, everyone, to Season 2, Episode 44 of the Premiere Pod. I'm your host, Yash Bika, joined by my co-host, Tyler Chan. In this episode, we're going to discuss the Chelsea-Liverpool game, the problems at Manchester United, and Manchester City's big 8-0 win over Watford over the weekend, and much more. To get things started, the biggest game of the weekend, as we always like to start it off at, Chelsea-Liverpool. Chelsea hosting Liverpool at Stamford Bridge, but Liverpool ended up getting the win. Excellent goals pretty much throughout the match. Conte had a really good goal to pull, you know, Chelsea back into a fighting position to maybe get an equalizer, but the goals by Alexander-Arnold and Roberto Firmino were too much for Chelsea. But once again, another game where Chelsea show off their young attacking flair and show that they are willing to fight and they have a good heart and good spirit, but not enough to get the job done. I thought in the 80th minute, I legit thought that Chelsea were going to pull one back, but missed chances by, you know, multiple players up front, ended up Liverpool escaping with the win. But yeah, Liverpool are continuing to roll in the Premier League. I think there was a stat they haven't lost in a very long time. So I think the last loss in the Premier League was probably the Manchester City game of last season in December. So it's been a while since Liverpool have lost a match in the Premier League.
Yeah, they actually haven't lost in the Premier League. They actually have a 15-game winning streak now in the Premier League, which is...
That's crazy.
I believe third best right now of all time. And at home, they haven't lost since, say, April 2018.
Oh, my gosh.
That's Crystal Palace.
A long time.
So it's been a long time. So they're keeping it strong. And on the road, they managed to pick up this win, which I'm very thankful for because... In all honesty, when watching this game, Chelsea could have tied. They could have tied this game and ended the game 2-2. And there are several chances that were just missed because maybe Batshuayi just didn't get the ball on target, or Cesar Azpilicueta's goal at the very first half was called for an offside from VAR, just got it revoked. And that was just from having someone be offside by just a foot in the build-up play to the goal. And that's something that VAR caught after the fact. So I was surprised that that even happened. That was so lucky for Liverpool to get that goal back for them, or basically get Chelsea's goal revoked, which for me is kind of like getting a goal back. But this game, Liverpool basically, is something I sort of saw coming where they kind of had to get their goals in kind of like a scrappy way. They got both their goals from set pieces, from Trent Alexander-Arnold's monster.
It was a monster
free kick from the top of the box. Like, the ball just flew. It just, from a blink of an eye, just from where it was at the top of the 18-yard box to upper right corner in like a second. It was insane. And the second goal, it was like the same kind of setup where there's two players on the ball, and then one player would run over it, give it a different angle, a different direction, and then the second player would just like either cross it in or shoot it, and then all the Chelsea defense just weren't ready for this different setup, like this new angle that the second player would just like roll the ball to or just like run over. So I think Chelsea, they were very sound defensively in open play, but it's just during these set pieces, they weren't expecting that. And honestly, I wasn't expecting that either, but I was really surprised that in open play, Chelsea played so well on the counterattack, because there were times when they would cross in the ball, and if Batshuayi or Tammy Abraham just a little bit more clinical, they could have honestly gotten like a goal or two. And Conte, his goal was just from, I would say, Liverpool just not really being switched on for the entire second half. In second half, they kind of stop the press as much, and they kind of allow Chelsea to, you know, dictate the ball more, which is a little dangerous. And Klopp, he didn't get a sub in, he didn't get Milner in time, and that's right, literally got him in right after Conte scored, and that's when Liverpool kind of just set up shop. But it was kind of worrying at those times, because usually when you see a champion team and they do set up shop, usually it's like nothing comes in. And if there is an opportunity, like, they shut it down immediately. So letting Conte get that shot off and that goal, a little worrying, but they still managed to get the win nevertheless. So I'm glad for that.
Yeah, it was a good game. Definitely at the end, it was definitely a really good game. But once again, Frank Lampard coming up short in the Premier League in terms of win tally. And Mourinho, as a pundit for Sky Sports right now, basically said along the lines that, you know, he was kind of criticizing Lampard that if you praise a team, even though they lose, about their good performance and you keep praising them, it kind of brings off rubs a bad mentality onto the team that it's okay to lose, even if you play well. My question, quick reaction to this is, how do you feel about Mourinho's point on that, you know, that performance issue where you can have a good performance, but if you don't win, it's nothing. Do you agree? Do you feel like he has a point there, or do you feel like he's just being a little too harsh?
Well, in the end, it does matter, because for the team and the standings overall, at the end of the day, it's like, did you win? Did you get a draw, or did you lose? And Chelsea aren't in a position where they can get the title, but they still do have to perform and get points and finish at least top six, like, and their expectations. So at the end of the day, this is, in my opinion, Chelsea's best performance so far this season. Unfortunately, it did end in a loss. So there are positives to take away, but overall, it is still a loss. And I think that's kind of what Mourinho was saying, that it's you can take some things away from it, but in the end, it's still a loss. And you can't really give that an overall positive thing, like a positive spin, because, like, in the end, you still have to be getting wins no matter what. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's just like, I thought it was a good ascendance into what they will be eventually.
No, I think it was. I think he does have a point there, but I believe, like, what Lampard and Chelsea kind of have to do right now, sort of what Manchester United have to do, is they're building a project. And a lot of times when you are building something, you're not going to get the immediate results, but you want to see some progress and some decent signs of the team is improving. So I think there needs to be an eye on the performance a little bit, but I do agree, if you go super hard on the performance and don't even think about the result, then I think you're losing the bigger picture of, you know, we have to get back to winning titles and all that. But this isn't the first time Mourinho has a pretty decent point. He's had some really good insight. I don't know if you ever had a chance to watch some of the stuff on YouTube about the Sky Sports with Mourinho, basically answering a lot of questions. He's had some pretty cool insight about his time at Manchester United, the current state of the Premier League, and how to basically manage a team right now, because obviously he was a recent manager. He's seen the heights of Liverpool and City. So I think he's had some really cool moments as a pundit right now. Probably will get a job soon, but we don't know where. But right now, he's doing a good job as a pundit. But quickly going on to the former team he managed, Manchester United, losing to West Ham at home, or West Ham beating Manchester United at home 2-0. Aaron Creswell and Yarmolenko Malenko getting on the score sheet. But the bigger picture here, West Ham looking like a good side, maybe a side that could possibly challenge in that top seven or even get into, you know, maybe that sixth spot. But looking like a team that's probably going to be best of the rest, along with Leicester City and a couple other teams. But once again, Manchester United falling flat again. The squad was weak on this one. Marcus Rashford came off injured. And basically, it was left for Jesse Lingard to play striker. Mason Greenwood wasn't in the squad because of some tonsillitis issues. But the lack of depth is already creeping in. And it's only 5 or 6 weeks into the season. And it's not a good picture right now for United. They are lacking, you know, movement, they're lacking fluidity, they're lacking a lot of things right now, and I personally just don't know where it's going right now. I think the bigger grand scheme of things, you know, you just got to trust Ole and trust that, you know, it's tough right now, but he is building something bigger, and it's going to take a really long time. Even the board has said that they don't expect a United challenge at least until 2023. They basically, like, they've conceded that they don't expect a title challenge until then. I think the bigger problem is why there wasn't a bigger investment into players, knowing that they already sold Lukaku, they gave away Sanchez on loan, they sold, you know, Ander Herrera, Antonio Valencia went off. There just wasn't enough replacements brought in to help out the squad. And I think that's a failure on the board to not, you know, fund the money and not to fund these buys. And I think that's the biggest problem right now, is the lack of trust the fans have with the board, because the board say all these things and they've hit a record revenue hit, but they're still not investing into the squad as they should. And I think that's the biggest problem, is the lack of investment over the summer.
But even then, United did spend a lot of money on Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire. It's just they didn't really bring in the bench players, the players that could come in if there are injuries. And unfortunately for Manchester United, that did happen.
And that's the thing. That's the biggest thing, is because, you know, we did, like, I'm happy we bought Harry Maguire and Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I'm happy we're doing that. I'm also happy that we're promoting these youth players. But also, you know, a lot of this has to deal with, you know, getting some of the older players and getting some of the players that weren't very good for United out of the club. But with that, you know, they had to see this coming. You know, there's no way they could have thought that Paul Pogba, Martial, Rashford would have all stayed healthy the entire season. That's just not possible. You know, since they sold Ander Herrera, they should have went onto the market and tried to buy a midfielder, or try to get someone in there. Because there was a guy, Bruno Fernandes, who's heavily linked with United all summer. They have ultimately chose not to go after him. I mean, I was just thinking about it. You know, with Liverpool, they bought Fabinho, they bought Keita. They continued to supply their midfield with depth. Right now, United just don't have that depth. And then, you know, that's a glaring sign of the lack of investment over the board, thinking that this squad right now was good enough to do anything.
So right now, thinking about it, when you see Alexis Sanchez leaving or he left, and also Lukaku, he left as well. Do you feel like United should have kept them now, or do you still feel like they should have parted ways with them?
I think personally they should have parted ways with Lukaku. He was a guy that didn't want to be at the club, and he was very unhappy. And I wouldn't want a guy like that on the club, because he's just going to bring everyone else down, and you never know what could transpire from that. I'm glad that he's gone. I'm also glad Alexis Sanchez is gone, because right now Antonio Conte is having problems with Sanchez. Like, he says, until he gets completely fit or gets to my training regimen, then he's not going to play. So clearly Sanchez is pretty much past his best at this point. So he needed to go, but they needed to bring at least someone in, someone that was like maybe a decent, reliable goal scorer. It didn't even have to be like an all-star, just someone, an experienced striker behind them that could have at least supplied some goals. And, you know, with that, we have young players such as Rashford and Mason Greenwood that we're relying on. And the two goals, I think they've scored two goals in open play in the past five games. I mean, that's horrible. That's a horrible record. And Rashford hasn't scored a goal in open play since the Chelsea match. His other goals have been from the penalty spot. And we're basically relying on Mason Greenwood, a 17-year-old, to lead the front line for Manchester United. And if that doesn't speak about the lack of investment and some of the problems, I mean, that should paint the picture for most people about what's really going on right now at United.
There is a thing, though, that Marcus Rashford is debated. Is he a winger? Is he a striker? And Mourinho himself said that he trusted Rashford as a striker, as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is this season. And he trusted him to the point where in the Europa League final, he even had Marcus Rashford as his striker. Mm-hmm. So do you see Rashford more as a winger or a striker?
To be honest,
right now they are struggling.
Yeah. To be honest, I really don't know. I feel like I don't want to say this because he's so young, but even Ole said that he sees, out of the Martial, Rashford, and Greenwood, he says Greenwood is the most natural finisher out of all of them. He's the best finisher out of all of them, but he obviously doesn't have the experience, and he's obviously a bit younger than those guys. And, you know, Rashford and Martial are still pretty young as is, but, you know, there's been a lot of United fans kind of calling out Rashford recently. I don't particularly agree with it, because I think we need to stand behind him as a United fan. But I mean, this is Rashford's fourth full season in the Premier League. He's now 21. Obviously he's still so young, and I kind of forget about how young he is because we've been seeing him for so long. But you know, you would hope that he's kind of developed, you know, more of a instinct in terms of goal scoring, you know, picking up. Like, he does make some great runs, and I have to give him that, but a lot of times in front of goal, you can kind of tell he kind of doesn't know. It just seems like he still doesn't know what he needs to do, whether it's finessing a shot, getting it past the keeper, slotting it past the keeper, shooting with power, shooting with finesse, you know, chipping it over a keeper. I feel like he's still kind of lacking a lot of those things that you kind of need and that you would expect for him to kind of pick up four seasons in the Premier League. Hopefully, with him getting a more constant run as striker at this point, maybe that might help him develop. But right now, if Martial comes back, I kind of trust Martial right now as the front man leading Manchester United than Marcus Rashford, because right now Rashford really hasn't given me a lot to, you know, trust him. So right now I trust Martial because he's a bit better when it comes to behind having his back on the goal. And I think Martial, his trickery and like a little bit of his skills, I think he has better skills than Rashford. I feel like he's just a little bit more clinical in front of goal. That's just my personal opinion for right now. I think Martial right now is just a little bit more clinical than Rashford in front of goal.
And I could agree, because when Martial did come to the Premier League, he was kind of like the same in terms of Rashford's positioning, where it's like, is he a winger? Is he a striker? But in the end, throughout the seasons, like, you see Martial is a very clinical player, like in terms of number of games played and number of goals scored per game. But also, going back to just like the bench and depth overall, whenever you see like the main teams like Manchester City and Liverpool, their bench usually is not of players that are bought just for the bench. Yeah, there are a few, like for Liverpool, for example, there is like Jadon Sancho, who's now kind of just a bench sub kind of player. And then for Divock Origi, he does get a few starts, but then majority of the time he is on the bench and he's kind of like impact player. But then the other players are players that were formerly starting 11, like Adam Lallana. You got James Milner as well. So these players were players that were in the original starting 11 for Liverpool, but they just got outplaced by new players like Fabinho, or for Lallana, it'd be like Wijnaldum. He just stepped up more to his position. And these kind of players like Adam Lallana and James Milner became depth and players that are supplied for Liverpool's bench. And I kind of see that now for United in Nemanja Matic and Ashley Young, because originally they were in the starting 11, but now with Scott McTominay rising up and also Luke Shaw, when they are both healthy, and also, of course, Paul Pogba taking up the same slot as Nemanja Matic, you see those two players, Nemanja Matic and Ashley Young, on the bench now. But they don't have those other players like Shinichi Shaqiri and Divock Origi, where they kind of bought them to be kind of those impact players off the bench. And I feel like that is a key kind of player that they need to be looking for, not only for January possibly, but also for just the next few transfer windows. Because you can't just get all mall in one transfer window, because like these players will know, it's like they want to play. And if you see them get like three impact players that supposedly you'll think it's like, oh, they're going to be on the bench, then they probably won't want to come anyway. So in these kind of situations, especially also when you see all the strikers are kind of like the same kind of build, where it's like just pacey, fast, really good at dribbling. There's no United striker or forward that's just like a Fernando Llorente, where it's just like someone who's just going to head the ball, or just someone who can just hold up play. It's just all kind of like the same kind of players. So United also need to kind of diversify their portfolio in terms of the players they have up front. And that's kind of like my take right now, because when you look at the United team, you can kind of know what to expect, because they kind of have most of the same players up front. I was wondering if you thought the same.
No, I definitely agree. I think there's just that lack of depth, and also that lack of, you know, that different outlook you can get as a different striker. You know, we don't have that change of pace guy, or that guy that can just hold up the ball. Right now, a lot of the players at United kind of do the same position, but I don't know. Hopefully they can turn it around. Hopefully we'll start seeing better results. Pretty sure like it just cannot continue like this. You know, there's going to be times where, I believe like coming soon, United could go on a run where they start winning games, start looking like a decent side, but it's all about that growing pains and all about that process of getting back to where Manchester United hopefully want to be back, you know, winning titles and back challenging for trophies. But quickly switching over to Arsenal, surviving Aston Villa 3-2 at home. Again, Aubameyang savoring Emery. Pepe got in the scoring sheet, and Maitland-Niles actually got a red card in this game. But question here, is Unai Emery the man to lead Arsenal out of this? Or is this the point where Arsenal kind of realize that Unai Emery is not the guy and they start searching for the next guy that replaced Emery? Can you see Emery getting sacked, and is Emery the right guy?
I still think Emery is the right guy, because in these situations where you go down 10 men while down to Aston Villa, usually it is up to the manager to turn the team around and give that team talk and kind of get them to win, especially at home at the Emirates. And they managed to get the result. And I feel like at the end of the day, if the manager, no matter what he does, gets the end goal, the end result that they need, the win, the trophy, or the place that they need to be in the end of the Premier League standings, if that manager can get them there no matter what, then he should be able to keep his job, because like he managed to obtain an overall goal that he set out for the team and his expectations for that team set by, say, the board or the fans themselves. So,
see, I have to disagree. I personally think Emery isn't the guy, because this is his second year. All right, we gave him a pass on his first year. Okay, he's, you know, taking over a legendary figure of Arsene Wenger. He's got to get his team right in terms of like how he wants the team to set up and everything. But look at it now. He's still having the same problems he had last year, the defense. I know Kieran Tierney and Hector Bellerin made their starts during the week in the Carabao Cup, but you know they're going to be a big addition. But the center backs, they're still having the same problem in terms of trying to play at the back. The center backs just aren't good enough. And I think because of that, I think the fact that they're still having these same defensive issues, I think it may lead to Arsenal maybe looking for another guy. I don't think he'll get sacked. I think it will have to be in a position where if Arsenal don't look like they're going to finish in the top four or get Champions League, because they need to get Champions League this season. If they don't, I think this could be a point in time where the Arsenal board just kind of look in another direction and go for another coach. But right now, I think Emery can survive. But I personally think if they don't get Champions League, or if they're looking like they're not, I think Emery has to go.
I still trust in Emery to be able to get them into Champions League, whether it's getting top four in the Premier League, or in my opinion, what I think will happen is they'll win the Europa League. And right now, we kind of all saw it coming, where they're going to have to win games like this by literally scoring as many goals as they can, because they know they're going to leak in goals from their defense. And sure enough, this game, it kind of happened where like they let in two goals from Aston Villa, and then they had to score three, and then they end up doing that. So their best defense was offense. And
yeah. That's risky.
It's risky, but we saw Liverpool do that a few seasons ago. And eventually, when they got their defense in shape with Virgil van Dijk, of course, we've been saying Arsenal, all they really need are center backs. So I wouldn't really go too hard on Emery until he gets the center back he needs, because for now, he's kind of just using what he has. And although he got Kieran Tierney and David Luiz was not really the smartest move, in my opinion. But, of course, Callum Chambers did make a substitute appearance, and he scored. And if Callum Chambers manages to get into that back four, which I think he should, because talking to a few Arsenal fans, like, their opinion of him is very high. And also, my personal opinion of Callum Chambers is that he should be one of those main center backs instead of Socrates or David Luiz, because he has some of those natural defending abilities and that leadership that they're kind of lacking. And that's, I don't know why he wouldn't be starting this game against Aston Villa, a team that they could put a test on. And that's why it was kind of risky for them to basically start Saka, one of those random forwards that did perform pretty well in the Europa League. But I also feel like they could have risked it in the defense as well, by putting in Callum Chambers this game. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
I mean, I feel like Maitland-Niles low key got the red card because he saw Hector Bellerin was coming back. He's like, you know what? YOLO. So just get the red. I'm not going to be playing next week anyway if Bellerin's back.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting situation to keep track of Arsenal, but that, you know, Arsenal escaping a win, they have to go to Old Trafford. We'll preview that game later in the episode, but quickly going to Leicester. Leicester City beating Tottenham. James Maddison getting the winner. I mean, we've seen this kid, like we were talking about him last year, opening game against Manchester United, how good he was and the flashes he's shown. And he was pretty like, he was pretty consistent all of last season. You know, there were spurts where he didn't really do that much. But if you ever watched the Leicester game, even if he wasn't contributing to a goal or an assist, you always thought he could do something. And this season, he's kind of kicked on, scoring goals, getting assists. So it's only a matter of time. I think, honestly, after this summer or after this season, he's probably going to be on his way to a big club, a big money move to the Premier. I hope, hopefully staying in the Premier League to another club. I don't know where he could go. I would love to see him. I'm not just saying this because I'm a United fan. I think he would be really good as a Manchester United player because he's young and he can kind of play in different positions. He's not a guy that needs to play only as a number 10 or only as a winger. He can kind of survive and do his thing in the center of the field, or also he can be put out on the wings and still do a pretty decent job. So I'd love to see him at United, but I know it's going to be a huge fee to come get him out of Leicester.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I honestly don't know if you can leave Leicester, because you see certain players like Declan Rice and Wilfred Zaha. Those players on West Ham and Crystal Palace, respectively, they have fees that are in 70, 80, 90 million pounds. And for James Maddison, it's going to be clearly in that range. So a player like that, back in the days, like six seasons ago, they'd be maybe 40, 30 million at most. But now they've become so inflated that it's going to be hard to see Maddison even leave. And for a fee like that, it'd basically be like a kind of Harry Maguire situation. So if Manchester United, which I think would be the ideal team for him, because they have a lot of holes that they need to fill, and James Maddison is one of those players that would perfectly fit that void that they need for a playmaker. And I would say Juan Mata would have to ride the pine because of that.
Yeah.
But James Maddison, he would be a good addition, but it's just the fee. I don't know if he would leave Leicester on fees like that. So honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if James Maddison ends up staying at Leicester for a few more seasons because of just the inflation rates.
I don't know. If I'm Leicester, if they can't get him to commit to a long-term contract, why not profit off his money right now? I mean, they already profit off the Harry Maguire signing, and they just keep making bank. Kante, Maguire, Maddison, Mahrez. I mean, shout out to the Leicester City scouting department. They found some gems, getting some guys that are really on the cheap, because James Maddison used to play for Norwich back in the championship, and Leicester found him and bought him. And look at the player he's kind of turning into right now. Tottenham, once again, losing. They have the same point total as Manchester United right now at eight points. Things looking a little weird for them. I mean, we could talk about Tottenham for days, but you know, that'll probably be like another episode. But quickly transitioning into Manchester City, destroying Watford 8-0 at home. Bernardo Silva getting a hat trick, 8 goals on Watford. I mean, that's incredible. And I don't think I've seen an 8-goal game in a while. And Manchester City, man, the attacking talent they have just showed itself out. But, you know, against a Watford team that really isn't that good this season, Manchester City getting it done. And I think if it comes to the title race again between City and Liverpool, you know, Liverpool kind of have to start racking up those goals, because if City start to win games 4-0, 5-0, 3-0, which they're more than capable of, you know, that goal differential is really going to play a huge part into this title race.
Mm-hmm. And this was the fastest to 5 goals in any game.
Oh, yeah, they did it
in
what, like 15 minutes or something?
They did it in 18 minutes. Wow. 5 goals. It was 5-0 in 18 minutes.
That's like
minutes.
Playing FIFA on amateur.
I know. It was insane. But there was also times during this 18 minutes where Watford actually had a few chances. Gerard Deulofeu got on a few breakaways, just one-on-one of Ederson. And Ederson just managed to keep out Deulofeu's finishes, or it's just not clinical enough. But Man City were ruthless, especially after coming from Norwich last week, losing 3-2. So they had to respond. And of course, Pep Guardiola was not happy. And if you look at his reaction after their 5-0 up, he still wasn't happy. He wanted more goals. So that's why it went all the way to 8-0. They honestly were probably going for more. But especially on a Watford side that just under this new manager and this new transition, it wasn't really too surprising, especially with also City being at home. We kind of saw that it was going to be a City win just by how many goals, but no one was expecting 8 for sure, or 5 within 18 minutes.
Yeah, that's just so demoralizing. But
8 goals is insane.
It's demoralizing.
I know.
Oh, man. But, I mean, there's not much to talk about. It's City's continuing dominance in the Premier League. They just keep finding ways to do it. But going, switching over to this game against two teams that aren't doing too well right now, especially Wolves, a team that's similar in Watford. Wolves still don't have a win in the Premier League. They drew against Crystal Palace 1-1, basically getting a goal in the 90th minute. Again, they are struggling hardcore right now. And I have to pose this question. Is Nuno Espirito Sanchez, got his name a little mixed up there, but is his job on the hot seat? Because after last season, after they made all those incredible results beating Manchester United, I mean, they're beating like some top six teams, can, you know, very convincingly in terms of their performance. They're played really well. And then this season, they just haven't found a win. Performances have been a little bit mixed. They got thrashed by Chelsea. They're obviously in the Europa League, but is his job on the hot seat? Do you think he's gone? I personally think he could probably be gone by November if things continue to go the way they are.
For me personally, I would be the kind of owner that would see the situation as Wolves are in the Europa League and it is putting a toll on their team, and to the point where they're 19th now overall in the Premier League. And this is something we saw that could happen, and now it actually is. But he is a manager that managed to basically get him to the Europa League in the first place. So, and he also set.
But it's all about staying in the Premier League. You gotta get that money.
But also at the same time, he made this team very like specialized. He plays three in the back. He has players that he knows will play in the system very well. So I feel like if he did bring in a manager, you'd have to bring in a manager that also would have kind of like the same kind of mentality, or would be able to shape these players into like a whole new system, kind of rapidly.
Do you think the players will start to feel that the system is lost? I mean, if they continue to the way they are, do you think the players start losing faith in the system? And at that point, the manager kind of loses faith. The players kind of lose faith in the manager, and that's a terrible situation to be in.
I don't think they're losing faith really in the system. I think it's more just game fatigue because they're playing so many games. And for me, stamina is such a huge factor, and just game fitness is such a huge factor in being able to perform well. Because if all your players are performing at 30% or 40% when last season they're performing at 100% or 90%, 80% for most games, but now because this season there's so much going on that they can't really even perform at like peak performance during games, that's why we're starting to see that they're not really getting the performances or getting the results that they were getting last season. And I think over time, it will wear down on them and they'll get worse to the point where they will get kicked out of the Europa League. They will not be able to advance in cups, and then they'll see a significant decrease in the amount of games they have every week, and then they'll pick it up from there. And we saw that with Burnley, where they were in the qualifying Europa League, but then they didn't make it past the last round, and then they were suffering in the Premier League during that time in the beginning of the season. But once all the Europa League and European Cup competitions were over, for that team in particular, for Burnley in particular, they were able to rack back up in the Premier League and stay safe at the end of the season. But it did take time. It didn't really kick in till around December, where the team, Burnley, started to look more like the Burnley from previous seasons, where they could just get results against big teams, against any team really, at Turf Moor or away.
Yeah.
So I think for Wolves, at this rate, they're not handling these multiple competitions very well. So I don't think sacking the manager is the move. I think they're just gonna have to get kicked out of these competitions, just lose out. Just tank it. Just stay safe in the Premier League. But at the same time, and it was all the goal is to get into these competitions. So you kind of have to ride the line. It's like, do we just go all in and just try to do everything? Or do we just tank just say we got in as our accomplishment and then just try to survive now in the Premier League, because now at 19th, it is a little worrying.
Yeah. I mean, and they did add some players in there in the summer transfer window, but, you know, is seventh place the most cursed position in the Premier League? I think it has to be, because we've seen each and every year, no matter which team gets placed in there, the next season they just completely unravel and they're just not the same team that they were once before, like last season with Burnley. I mean, it just, every season we keep on seeing seventh place. The seventh place team always struggles again. But, you know, that kind of rounds up the last weekend, kind of previewing this weekend, this coming weekend. Biggest game, Manchester United Arsenal on Monday. Huge matchup. There was a joke on Twitter, whichever team loses this match is going to have their manager sacked. I think that's hyperbolic, but at Old Trafford, Arsenal historically have not done very well at Old Trafford. I think Pogba having another game in his game under him. I think Martial may have a chance of coming back, but most likely it will be Mason Greenwood leading the line. It will be scrappy. I don't know what to expect. I'm just going to kind of ride the United wave and go with the 1-0 win for United. I really don't know what to expect, but I'll go for United win 1-0.
Oh, man. Yes, I'm going to make you kind of sad, but...
No.
I think with the amount of injuries United have, and although this is a big game, big games, you never know what happens. Most Premier League games, you can't really tell what happens or what will happen. You can have an inkling and a prediction, like which is what we're having right now. But for big games, this can have the widest variance in terms of volatility for what the score could be. But for this game, I still think Arsenal are favorited because they can score an open play. And United at Old Trafford aren't really a fortress. They're not a team that will be a guaranteed team that will get results at home. And with the Arsenal side that can rack up goals in every single game they played, I think Arsenal will get a 2-1 win, unfortunately for Yush.
No, I don't want to see it. I think United will win 1-0, but hopefully United get the win, but we'll see what happens on that one. Going into this next matchup, Wolverhampton Wolves versus Watford. I'm going to go with Watford on getting a squeaky 1-0 win against Wolves at home, just because Watford at least have shown that they got a big draw against Arsenal in the final minutes of that game, drawing 2-2. Almost could have won that game. Had to sack their manager, got a new manager in. Manager that was in there before. I think because of that, you know, I kind of trust the squad of Watford a little bit more. With Wolves, same manager, same fatigue problem. I think all of that's going to creep up on them. And I think, once again, Wolves are still going to be searching for their first win in the Premier League. So I'm going to go Watford winning 2-1.
Well, the game is at Molineux, which is Wolves' home. And it is what Yosh just mentioned. It's a team of tired people versus the team that is completely demoralized after losing 8-0 from the previous week. So both teams are going to this game not the best situation, and also the bottom of the table. So 20th versus 19th. So they both need results. So I think if there's a time for them to bounce back and start climbing the table, it is from this game. Unfortunately, though, I don't see either team being able to top the other, because of just all the problems they have right now. So I think they'll both end up getting a 1-1 goal. So I'll see this game ending 1-1.
Nice. All right. 1-1. Now we got Crystal Palace versus Norwich, the final game. Norwich obviously have upsetted Manchester City. If you can do that, that's pretty well. Crystal Palace obviously went into Old Trafford, famously beating them in Roy Hodgson time, getting a last-minute winner with Patrick Van Aanholt. So both of them have had big upset wins against the Manchester clubs. Obviously, this is Crystal Palace is hosting this one, but Norwich with Timo Pukki. I mean, come on, give me some Timo Pukki. I think because of that, I want to go with a 2-0 Norwich win.
Ooh, 2-0 Norwich. Well, Soho's Park is always one of those grounds that I like to say is a the ground that changes the team. So for Crystal Palace, they're just a whole different team when they play at home. It's kind of like how Bournemouth at Vitality Stadium at their home is just like a whole other team. And I see that with Crystal Palace. But with Norwich, there's something special about them this season. Although they concede the most goals, Crystal Palace will probably get one. But I still see Norwich getting the win. I don't know why. I just have the feeling. Because, yeah, of course, Timo Pukki and also Cantwell and Emiliano, all these players, there's just something's going on over there at Norwich that's a little special in the front. Although they are conceding goals, it's kind of like a mini Arsenal kind of situation. But I think they'll be able to get a 2-1 victory at Selhurst Park against Crystal Palace.
Boom.
There we go.
There we go. We agreed on a Norwich. We both agreed on something.
There we go.
On this episode. But that kind of rounds it up for episode 44 for us. Please make sure to rate, comment, subscribe. We want to hear your guys' thoughts, what we can improve on, what would you like to hear. But it was a good episode. Hopefully, we'll see Manchester United get a win against Arsenal, but that's me hoping. Liverpool obviously continuing their dominance, but that is episode 44 for us. Thank you guys so much for listening. That kind of does it for us. Peace.
Peace.